This is Dr. Patty Shelton, and you are listening to the LongevIQ podcast. We discuss anti-aging and longevity science and how to benefit from it so we can all live long, healthy, happy lives. Just before we get started, a quick medical disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or to provide or replace medical advice. Please use this information to educate yourself as much as possible and share this information with a qualified health practitioner that you trust. In this episode, we'll take a dive into one of the world's oldest medical systems. Developed over 3,000 years ago in India, Ayurvedic medicine is a holistic approach designed to optimize health span and lifespan by living in balance and harmony with nature. But is this approach still relevant in modern times? And if so, how can we benefit from some of its principles? Our guest in this episode is Dr. Dawn Marieke Jacobson, MD, a functional integrative medicine physician who combines Ayurvedic medicine with genomics, advanced biometrics, and other cutting-edge approaches to help her patients achieve exceptional health and longevity on all levels. Also joining us today, as always, is Amir Ginsberg, the founder of LongevIQ. Welcome, Dr. Jacobson. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure. I am very grateful to be able to share what I've learned along the way in my health journey and through others' health journeys.
You've had a really very interesting and unique journey. So maybe share with us a little bit just about the various healing modalities that you've studied and how you came to be where you are.
Sure. I grew up in a part of the country, north central United States, Minnesota, where really what healthcare was going to get your medical degree or a nursing degree. And I didn't grow up around an environment that was holistic. I think we were pretty straightforward, upper Midwesterners, and it was pretty much Western medical approaches, and decided to pursue that. Went to medical school, didn't really even at that time explore integrative or holistic medicine. I just went through, learned it, learned surgery, learned pharmaceuticals, and that was fine. And then through a series of my own sort of health conditions, was led to ask different questions. And through that process, discovered Ayurvedic medicine, integrative medicine, and naturopathic medicine, herbal medicine. And there just became an opportunity in my life where it was time to go to what I call med school 2.0. I was going to go and learn through Andrew Weil's fellowship at the University of Arizona, which I completed, health training through Maharishi Ayurveda based in Fairfield, Iowa. And it just all started really clicking on how real healing happens versus just treating a condition or monitoring symptoms. And I have been very, you know, blessed to be able to then practice that way full time for the past 8 years.
Wonderful. Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about Ayurvedic medicine. So for our audience who's maybe not familiar with that term, what does that mean? What's the approach like?
I'm glad that this is part of what we're going to talk about today. And for those who have practiced yoga, often learn aspects of Ayurvedic medicine just through that practice, or they have a yoga teacher that brings in some of the principles of Ayurveda. But commonly the way it's first introduced is, what does it mean in Sanskrit? And Ayurveda is the science or the study of life or of living. And I think that's important to build on a bit. Ayurveda captures the totality of how to have a full, abundant, balanced energy life, a holistic healing system that this planet has created over time. It's a wholeness thing. It's not just wellness. And so I think that's probably the easiest way to explain Ayurveda. The other approach that I use with my patients and other people who ask me about what is Ayurveda is, with immigrant patterns in our country, people became very familiar with traditional Chinese medicine, and eventually acupuncture became more and more accepted and covered by insurance and things like that. Ayurvedic medicine's been around as long, and it's a similar type of holistic healing system that's now making its way into US culture and becoming more known. And in many ways, it has similar aspects to it. So it will get more familiar over time. There's manual body treatments, there's herbs, there's herbal tradition, there's ways that you would align your life with daily routines, which we're going to talk about later in the session. So it's wholeness, and it's been around a long time, well established, coming out of the part of the globe that we now call India, but it was definitely created long before the country of India existed. There's a way in Ayurvedic medicine that it's always about who is coming to you. That's just as important as what symptoms or illness they may have. So it's understanding that there's a unique set of physical attributes, that a person has, there's a very unique way that they think and process things mentally. There are different ways that people process their emotions, you know, feel emotions, process them, digest them, make them part of their path. And then even a unique way that people would approach their spirituality or their consciousness beyond thought. What's really nice about that element is it keeps the focus on who the person is that comes to see you as the healer. All sorts of practices emerge with Ayurvedic medicine over time, just like any medical approach on the planet, but really is personalized in that then everything from food to herbs to music that you play to the colors that you wear become part of what heals you and balances you ultimately for your longest, healthiest, most vibrant life. The other aspect of Ayurvedic medicine that will come into play in Western medicine more and more is they've never separated themselves from the seasons or the times of day. And I like to call it body clock medicine or body clocks and biorhythm medicine. I think that most people would be more familiar with the term circadian medicine, which gets a bit more into day-night cycles because that's been so well studied. More science is showing that the times of day we eat, and there's other aspects of the times of day we move our body that align the functions in the body so that cells recover faster and prevents disease from developing. One thing that intrigues me about Ayurvedic approaches is that there's a season for everything. So there's a way that the body stays in balance that is a little bit different when you're a child versus when you're a young adult versus middle-aged adult and getting into the wisdom years.
That's beautiful. And I love that you use the phrase the wisdom years. So a really positive view of what we grow into as we pass into that right. section of life. And you mentioned Ayurveda's body clock medicine earlier. Could you talk a little bit more about how Ayurveda views these rhythms on the level of a day, a year, a whole lifetime, and how we work with those rhythms in Ayurveda?
Ayurvedic medicine, when you start the training and kind of start learning about it, is you learn that the energies that are outside the window, that are happening outside, the temperature, the humidity, the movement, the light, all of that affects the human body. So you can't really separate yourself from the universe. You're part of it. With that comes certain times of day that you would do certain things and changes that you would make by season, depending on what is happening. So microclimates, where you're living on the planet, is going to be different. It's going to be different depending on living in the tropics versus living somewhere where you're having the four seasons. The principles are the same though, but there'll be variations by climate. The more that we honor the way the body is inherently designed to respond in its environment, you would modify things based on time of day and temperature, heat, humidity, things like that, to then prevent wear and tear on the cells and prevent toxin buildup in the body. So times of day are important from both an Ayurvedic and Western body clock science context, because it's going to allow your body to repair itself and build tissue and remodel tissue most effectively. Here's a specific example. Ayurvedic medicine has said for a very long time, there's less wiggle room with sleep times. Pretty much no matter what your sort of unique body type is, we recommend that you would go to bed between 10 and 11. Like there's not a lot of room. Sometimes you can go to bed at 8:30 and sometimes midnight. It's a little tighter of a time recommendation. Getting up can vary from anywhere from 4 a.m. to 7, depending on the person's unique constitution. But that time window between 10 and 4 is really important. So now if I put my Western cellular molecular medicine hat on, the dementia research has shown that you clean out those types of metabolic byproducts like amyloid, oxidative stress, inflammation, most efficiently between 10 and 2:30 in the morning. So your body actually repairs itself, including DNA repair mechanisms, in that window of time. It's also why people who work the night shift, it's been linked to cancer. So that's clear alignment there to me, that when I'm working with someone, like I work with pilots, I work with people who work the night shift, how do we balance the functions to where you're still getting some of that repair mechanism at that time of day? We have to think about cellular repair in longevity. We need to repair our DNA. We need these normal processes of metabolic activity in the body to thrive and to live long life.
How about talking a little bit more about kind of the specifics of the eating pattern that Ayurveda might recommend? When would we eat our first meal? When would we eat our last meal?
That's exactly where it's going to go. I love, love, love this. So in Ayurvedic medicine, this is a daily routine. You do quite a bit of self-care and nourishment in the morning. That's why that morning of 4 to 7 is broader. Like you might get up and meditate for an hour, or you might get up and meditate for 5 minutes. However you design the morning routine is going to influence everything for the rest of the day. So Ayurvedic medicine would say, get up, have a healthy walk outside, get sunlight on your retina, on your skin. That's great for keeping the circadian rhythms aligned. You would probably do some exercise in the morning, yoga, preferably, I think, before you would eat so that you would be burning some calories. You'd be doing a series of oral hygiene that would keep the biome and your nasal passages and your mouth all balanced. You're doing all that before you even really are doing food. And then you have breakfast, and it's usually on the lighter side. One caveat, a high carb breakfast isn't going to work for everyone. So there's this concept of personalizing the meal plan based on things. Timing itself, I think breakfast should be no later than 9. So somewhere in there, breakfast gets done, and then a big lunch with things that are harder to digest or take longer to digest. So that you have time to digest it and clear it. That's when Ayurvedic medicine says fire's the strongest, heat's the strongest. So noon is a big meal, and it's advised between 11 a.m. and 1. And you're supposed to take an hour for lunch. Then dinner between 5 and 7, so that you can have 3 hours before you go to bed, three and a half hours of digestion. So all that mechanical digestion is done. So you have dinner done by 6, you have breakfast at 8 or 9. That's automatically in that window of 13 to 14, 15 hour overnight fast that we know keeps blood sugar regulated, insulin resistance down, and also leads to healthy body composition. So that, I would say, is how I see Ayurvedic meal timing, but also matching some of the things we're seeing that are going to lead to health, including optimizing microbiome activity and sleep and things like that.
And at any point, would Ayurveda recommend, say, a day or a few days of fasting at any certain times of the year, or would it really be consistent every day the same?
It's interesting. So I trained through Maharishi Ayurveda. The way they taught me was, like, fasting isn't necessarily great for the body. That's very different compared to some schools of fasting out there, which do a water fast for 5 days, or some of the ketogenic fasts out there that lets you eat ketogenic friendly snacks or small things, get into ketogenesis for 3-5 days for brain health and things like that. Rather than those types of fasts, I started using the term nutritive fast, meaning that you might have small amounts of food, things like cooking your grain if you eat it, and then saving the water and sipping on the water. It's not zero calorie day. Light eating, like nutritive liquid kind of day here and there, I think is very healthy, especially in our culture where we just can graze. We're always having food and it's always abundant and it's relatively affordable and easy to get, that we learn to eat light. We eat a lot of heavy foods in our country. When we prepare them heavily. But the body wants to experience lightness, and the bowel needs to rest. So we have to sort of give ourselves a break from all that and just allow everything to rest. Like one day a week, do really light eating. And I think in longevity science, it's that 300, 400 calorie day. Do your routine, get that solid 13 to 14 hour overnight fast all the time, and then do a really light day once a week. There's also a nice detoxifying, calming effect on the body if you do that. And I think it's hugely important to start understanding the toxins we take into our body and how to get them out.
You brought up a very important topic in health and longevity, which is this concept of toxins and how they affect our health. Could you expand a little bit on how Ayurveda views the process of detoxification?
Ayurvedic medicine has always had a balance of activity and rest. It's a balance of breaking down and building up. And what I love about it so much is they have detox built in, and they always have. So you would go to an Ayurvedic treatment center and you would stay there for anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks, and you would have your basically detox foods. You're doing yoga, you're doing breath practices, and just getting deep oxygenation, which we know is so important for energy and detoxification in the body. You just would do that 2-3 times a year, particularly at the changes of the seasons. There is toxin buildup. It's inflammation. It's oxidative stress. It's DNA that needs to be repaired that's hanging out there and maybe going to become a cancer cell, maybe going to accelerate heart disease or amyloid deposition in the brain. So I think detoxification is important, but what Ayurveda does right is it rebuilds you after they do the detox. So they might give you a big cleanse with healthy MCT oil, which is ghee, or you're given castor oil or something to like entirely clean out the colon. Our version of that in the West is a colonoscopy prep. We just do it in 24 hours instead of a week, you know? Very curious to see if this colonoscopy prep can be used to our advantage in Western culture for longevity. Not that you do the colonoscopy more than would be recommended, but that idea. Similarly, colonics, water high in the colon, I think, is not as gentle to the body as sesame oil basti in Ayurveda. It's a way to get natural herbs into the body through the rectal and lower GI mucosa, very calming to the body, the nervous system, much less invasive than other things we would do, you know, in Western medicine.
You alluded earlier to kind of seasonal variations. So for those of us who maybe live in a climate with a summer and a winter, how you might make those shifts?
I often tell people we're going to match what we're doing health optimization wise with what we're seeing out the window. So let's say someone comes in, they have a lot of fire energy, and it's summer in Arizona. It's 110 degrees in Tucson or Phoenix or wherever they're living, Sedona. They're a fire person. They're driven. They're impatient. They want things done now. And once they decide they're going to do something, they're going to get it done de pronto. That's fire energy. And I ask them, what is your favorite food? And they'll say, oh, I love hot chili. I love spicy peppers, like all that Southwest Tex-Mex stuff, right? And I'm like, what symptoms are you having? Or I get rashes and heartburn. Those are signs of heat in the body. So Ayurvedic medicine would say, let's prescribe foods that are going to calm the heat down in your body. It might be salads, which you wouldn't recommend for everybody. But for that person, cooler foods, cooler natural foods would be fine. Now it's picture postcard perfect Christmas weather out here. I have a blizzard outside my window. I'm going to be eating warming foods. So even if someone said, I still tend to kind of go out of balance because I'm a fire person, but it's negative 20 degrees out there right now. So maybe we bring in the garlic, we bring in the hot, spicy jalapeno pepper chilies that person likes, but they eat them in the winter, but not in the summer.
You've said a few times, let's base what we're doing on what we see out the window. How does Ayurveda view going outside? And would they say it's important to spend some time outside? If so, when would you do that? And would it be different in different seasons?
I would say we are no longer an outdoor group of human beings, right? We have created a world where we're naturally inside all the time, unless you still have a job where you're outside. At least most of the people I work with are indoor people. And vitamin D, of course, we've known for a long time that vitamin D is important. It's becoming more front and center now with COVID research and even cancer prevention and definitely autoimmune research. We rely on vitamin D for so many things. But Ayurveda says, get out in the morning, go for a morning walk. And that is going to make sure that your circadian clock stays balanced. Open up your windows, get fresh air, be outside, unless it's somehow going to be harmful to you. You know, if you have a lot of fire energy, they wouldn't say go run outside when it's 90 degrees outside.
One thing I find really fascinating about your practice is the way that you integrate these kind of ancient, maybe more natural types of approaches with the really modern scientific kinds of approaches. So how do you fold in things like genomics into your practice?
First of all, let me just say that Ayurveda didn't somehow get dispensed. The wisdom didn't come down like thousands of years ago in one package and has been unchanged. It's been adapting and growing and bringing in the science of the day for centuries, right? I think epigenetics is where Ayurveda shines because it's everything we just talked about, the environment around you, the foods you're eating, daily routines are going to turn on your resiliency genes, or they're going to turn on cancer genes, or they're going to turn the heart disease acceleration genes, or they're going to turn off sirtuins, and you're going to start aging, or your telomeres are going to be not as long. We can start blending in all sorts of Western testing. I love it, to be honest. But it comes down to what are you going to do to then optimize that? So to me, it's very easy to interweave the two. And the genomics program I like is IntelX DNA based out of Austin, Texas. They'll put things in there like, oh, these genes are a little bit different, right? Like slightly different. They're not as optimal. If I see detox pathways like the glutathione SNPs and I check the glutathione level and it's low or suboptimal, like low normal, and that person's mercury level stays around 10, no matter, you know, they love fish and they're still eating it like once every other week, but their mercury level is still high. Like clearly they don't have the detox capacity genetically, then I can still choose personalized herbs and things from Ayurveda that would help lower or optimize everything for them.
And you mentioned resilience, which makes me think about stress. In the modern world, almost everybody experiences being under stress, at least some of the time. So how can people maybe optimize their lifestyle, according to Ayurveda and other parts of medicine, to help them deal with stress better? How might you shift your patterns in times of more stress?
Clearly, the daily routines are important. I'm like, well, what time do you go to bed? Well, 12 o'clock, 12:30. You know, when do you get up? 8:30. You're pushing the body clocks in a way that doesn't really allow your body to recover from stress anymore. And the inputs haven't changed. So I have to talk delicately with people around that because this idea of a full, abundant life is actually causing disease. We push ourselves to a level of productivity that just isn't healthy for us. So I have to find an entry point for that. I'm like, let's have an honest conversation. The inputs have to change on some level. We're going to see it more and more in research that these lifestyle choices matter. Research that came out maybe 5-6-7 years ago from the Scandinavian countries described how people come home from work at 4:30 and they're like going for a walk with their family and they're having dinner with their family. And I'm like, is this even real? Like, does this even happen? And they were talking about the health outcomes related to that. I think we need to take a look at some of these other daily routines, especially when your energy bank starts going down.
Could we maybe talk a little bit about the concept of doshas in Ayurveda, the way that Ayurveda categorizes people or puts people into different groups?
I call them mind, body, spirit types. There's these 10 pairs of opposites that Ayurveda uses for diagnostic purposes that then they condense down into three. Doshas are core constitutions, vata, which is mostly air, so it's light and mobile, quick moving, dry. There's pitta, which is mostly fire, but some water. And so that's hot and oily, intense. And then there's earth, kapha, which is primarily earth, a little bit of water, which is heavy and slow and reflective. There's ways then that you treat people based on those constitutions, mind, body, spirit types. There's also an Ayurvedic psychology category called Rajas Tamas, and that's sattva. Rajas is intense, it's driven, whereas tamas is more inert. And you want a healthy balance of that so that you're not just overthinking, overdoing, overgoing versus stuck and not moving. And mind, spirit kind of gets into this concept of sattva. And so you think of volunteerism, giving back to your community, selfless service, like where you're going out and doing something not for recognition or for money, but you're doing it just because it's the right thing to do and it's something you're called to do in your life. So those sattvic principles then get you into that roomy field where we let go of our judgments, we let go of our expectations, we're full on into self-compassion, self-awareness, allow others to be in that space. And you end up in this field that Rumi talks about, the field beyond what's right and what's wrong. And it's joy-filled and it's free and it's open. And that is where real healing happens because the body wants beauty. The body wants honesty to stay healthy. The body wants loving kindness and compassion. It just resonates with those things. Equanimity, it just does. There's just a way that you thrive when you sort of focus on those types of principles.
What a beautiful message. Absolutely. Super important message for everyone out there to listen to, addressing all levels of wellness.
I love it. And to me, then that is how you live your longest, healthiest life, because everything is just going to be in harmony in your body. And then we start seeing that in the biomarkers, the biometrics that we have. When we start interweaving mind, body, spirit types with what you're going to do for health based on a randomized controlled trial or a really good longitudinal trial, you just have to look in the mirror and say, you know, is what I'm doing working? Who are the healers that I need to talk to get as much information as I can? Because somewhere in there is the root cause. Somewhere in there is the set of solutions personalized to that person based on genomics, biometrics, some sort of mind, body, spirit assessment, and daily routines. To me, that is what's going to get you there. And we can decide what we want to measure together and follow. If the problem is inflammatory fats, and someone says, well, I have to keep eating out. And then I say, well, great, let's just work with that. Knowing that when you go to a restaurant, they're not using olive oil, they're using some sort of vegetable / canola oil, and it's probably increasing your inflammation. Or we find partially prepared meals like Sunbasket, Thistle, Saqqara, all these companies that just send you the meals. There's Ayurvedic ones out there too. Just so you can get at least the things to your house so you can cook more is sometimes a solution for people. And then we work together. Such a core part of my approach is the collaboration. We can work on something now and something else later. But healing begins with honest self-reflection. That honest self-reflection and being able to have a healing conversation with a provider at some points is immensely important. So you really understand what's going to fine-tune every function in your body for more days than not. And then really set you up for the longest, healthiest life.
I think you mentioned two huge takeaways we want to just reflect. One of them is be honest with yourself. Be self-aware. What I want to achieve in is my current situation. Am I happy with this or do I need help? And if so, what type of a healer do I need? It's a very honest conversation. It goes above and beyond agendas and beliefs. I think that's one thing that is an important message to convey. The other one is also huge, especially in functional medicine, and that is the interaction between the practitioner and the patient, the bidirectional, ever-evolving interaction and relationship where both the practitioner and the patient learn each other and grow together and personalize the approach, and it's probably not going to happen overnight.
It's a journey. Yeah. And I think that's why what I find really exciting is when I first meet with someone and they really are here to optimize and they've seen maybe a family member or a friend or another loved one in their life go through a healing crisis. They want to come and learn. They just want to come and learn about health and cells and lifestyle and how does this all work? And they come with this curiosity about things, which I think is refreshing. I also work with people who come in and they are in their health crisis. They want to talk about how am I going to take a supplement? How am I going to exercise, move my body? They might be seeing a therapist for the mind and the emotion stuff. So you digest your emotions and your thoughts. If you don't, you're just going to store up this stuff in your body somewhere if you don't just let it flow in out. And if you're a person that has deep spiritual questions, then you need that teacher to come in and help you work through the spiritual questions, the soul questions, if that's part of your healing path. And sometimes that's what's needed because the person finally addresses their soul questions. I love it. Whether they go to an Ayurvedic treatment center or to their Buddhist meditation week or whatever it is, and they come back and they're just like transformed.
Beautiful. That's really a nice way to sum up the wisdom of Ayurveda, the importance of mind, body, and spirit, addressing health on all the different levels. On that kind of a note, what's your best advice for people as they're looking to find balance in their own lives and work towards having the longest, healthiest life they can?
We talked about healing begins with honest self-reflection. So come from that point, what are you ready to sort of honestly look at and get feedback from a practitioner? And you can get more than one and you can decide what resonates with you and you can explore it and see how your body feels. Think what it means to be whole, like fully living as a human being, and not just are you well and are you fit. The two key tips that I probably recommend to everybody I work with that's pulled directly from Ayurvedic medicine is sleep times 10 to 11 p.m. in bed asleep is kind of a go-to. And then get up no later than 7. So there's these circadian rhythms that are central. And along with that is, I often write this into my plans, eat a light vegetarian breakfast between 7 and 9, a big lunch. If you have meat, cheese, dairy, have that all at lunch. Eat a light vegetarian dinner between 5 and 7 p.m. And if you need a healthy snack in there, great. If your blood sugar drops at night, you can do a nice little golden milk, healthy bedtime snack, but most people wouldn't probably need that. Get into a healthy 13 to 14 hour overnight fast and do a couple of days of light eating a month. You're just going to feel great. You're not going to turn on the danger signals in the body. You're giving plenty of nutrients to make those mitochondria little powerhouses in your cell. You're going to sleep great. It works. That's all I can say.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for coming and sharing all of your wisdom, the many different healing modalities that you've studied, all of your journey. Thank you so much for sharing that with all of us.
You are welcome. You're very welcome. Glad to be here.